This is Management 101. We're going through Fundamentals of Management by Sampson et al. We're on Chapter 13 on page 592, and it's all about leading teams. That's what we're looking at this lecture. So turn with me to page 596, and we'll start with the value of teams, the concept of the value of teams. So what is a team? First of all, it's important to define a team as a unit of two or more people who interact and coordinate their work to accomplish a common goal to which they are committed and hold themselves mutually accountable. Teamwork requires bringing together the right set of personalities, specialities, skills, clearly defining roles and responsibilities, and focusing everyone on a well-defined mission, establishing clear channels of communication and information sharing so that team members communicate their objectives and needs in all directions. It's a process of getting everyone to basically give up their individual egos, pull together in the same direction. Trust, obviously, is a crucial aspect of teamwork. On the table on page 597, you'll see there a contrast between what is a group and what is a team. So have a look at those categories and think for yourself how groups and teams are different. Effective teams can provide many advantages in organizations. They can create and innovate. They can improve quality. They can improve the speed of response times through better processing and procedures. They have a higher productivity and lower cost efficiency goal and scaffolding often, and they can enhance motivation and satisfaction within companies and organizations. So those five contributions that teams make, again, are creativity, quality, speed, productivity, and employee satisfaction. And all of these are for the purpose of having a more competitive advantage and higher organizational performance. When we think about the function of teams, a functional team is composed of a manager, their subordinates, in a formal chain of command. So you guys have actually drawn up a formal chain of command through functional teams in your group work in our tutorials for your businesses. So a lot of you had either president or CEO of your company listed, as well as your teams, such as the finance teams, marketing teams, production teams, and so forth, listed. So this is an example on page 599. Let's look at some of these functional teams now. So the cross-functional team is composed of employees from about the same hierarchical level, but from different areas of expertise. So one type of cross-functional team is a task force, which is a group of employees from different departments formed to deal with a specific activity and existing only until the task is complete. Another type of cross-functional team is a special purpose team, created outside the formal organizational structure to undertake a project of special importance or creativity. The fourth common type of team used in organizations is designed to increase the participation of workers in decision-making and the conduct of their jobs with the goal of improving performance. So self-managed teams typically consist of 5 to 20 multi-skilled workers who rotate jobs to produce an entire production of service. And self-managed teams are permanent teams that typically include the following characteristics. The team includes employees with several skills and functions, and they combine these skills. The team is given access to resources such as information, equipment, machinery, and supplies. The team is empowered with decision-making authority. There are also virtual teams. A virtual team is a group made up of geographically or organizationally dispersed members who are linked primarily through advanced information and telecommunications technologies. A global team is a cross-border team made up of members of different nationalities whose activities span multiple countries. Using technology to build trust and relationship is crucial for effective virtual teamwork. Shaping culture through technology reinforces productive norms. Monitoring progress and rewarding members keep the teams progressing towards goals. As the use of virtual teams grow, there are growing understandings of what makes them successful. On page 603, you can have a look at this table that outlines what effective virtual team leaders do. On the left-hand side, there are the practice columns, and on the right-hand side, there is the practical application of that, how it's done. So, for example, first one, use technology to build team relationships. Well, how's it done? Bring attention to it and appreciate diverse skills and opinions. Use technology to enhance communication and trust. Ensure timely responses online and manage online socialization are some examples of how this can be done in practice. Whenever you bring together a team of individuals, for a purpose and a reason, there's often going to be dilemmas or issues or conflicts that arise. So how do leaders, managers deal with these? We need to look at these. In organizations all over the world, some people love the idea of teamwork, but others hate it. Many people have both positive and negative emotions about being part of a team. There are three primary reasons that teams present a dilemma for many people. Number one, we have to give up our independence. When people become part of a team, their success depends on team's success. So they are dependent on how well other people perform, not just their own individual initiative and action. And you guys know that from your group work in class. Number two, we have to put up with free riders. Teams are sometimes made up of people who have different work ethics. The term free rider refers to a team member who gets benefits from team membership but does not actually actively participate in and contribute to the team's work. Number three, teams are sometimes dysfunctional. Some companies have had great success with teams, but there are also numerous examples of how teams in organizations fail spectacularly. So on page 606, you'll find five common dysfunctions in teams listed there, and they include lack of trust, fear of conflict, lack of commitment, avoidance of accountability, inattention to results. And in parallel to that, there are effective team characteristics such as trust, healthy conflict, commitment, accountability, and results orientation. So, what are some models of team effectiveness? You've got some videos on Canvas that you can have a look at to consider these, but let's have a look at what the text says. Team characteristics influence processes that are internal to the team, which in turn affect output, satisfaction, and the team's contribution to organizational adaptability. So good team leaders understand and manage stages of team development, cohesiveness, norms, and conflict to build an effective team. So these processes are influenced by team and organizational characteristics and by the ability of members and leaders to discern these processes in a positive manner. So on page 608, there are examples there of work team effectiveness models there for you. So organizational context, including leadership, environment, culture, strategy, reward control systems, include the team type, the team characteristics, and the team composition, which leads to a consideration of team processes with the output of work team effectiveness. So some of the team characteristics are size, diversity, and member roles. So teams need to be large enough to incorporate the diverse skills needed to complete a task, enable members to express good and bad feelings, and aggressively solve problems. However, they should also be small enough to permit members to feel an intimate part of the team and to communicate effectively and efficiently. The ability of people to identify with the team is an important determination of high performance. In consideration of diversity, because teams require a variety of skills, knowledge, and experience, a team is more effective if it considers diversity. In general, research supports this idea, showing that diverse teams produce more innovative solutions to problems. Diversity in teams of functional areas and skills, thinking styles, and personal characteristics is often a source of creativity. So, member roles. For a team to be successful over the long run, it must be structured so as to both maintain its members' social well-being and accomplish its tasks. To understand the importance of members fulfilling various roles on a team, consider the teams that you know about who have been successful. So in successful teams, the requirements for task performance and social satisfaction are met by the emergence of two types of roles: task specialists and socio-emotional. People who play a task specialist role spend time and energy helping teams reach their goals. They often display the following behaviors. They initiate ideas, they give opinions, they seek information, they summarize, they energize. People who adopt a socio-emotional role support team members' emotional needs and help strengthen the social entity. And they display the following behaviors, including encouragement, harmonization, reducing tension, following through, going along with the team, and compromise, shifting their own opinions to maintain team harmony. All of these skills are really important. A well-balanced team will do best over the long term because it will be personally satisfying for the team members as well as permitting the accomplishments of team tasks. So you feel fulfilled and satisfied within your own skill set as well as your contributions to the team. Let's look now at team processes and the stages of team development. After a team has been created, it's developed by passing through distinct stages. New teams are different from mature teams. Think about a time when you were a member of a new team, such as a sporting team, and consider how over time the team changed. You know, the dynamics changed, perhaps the roles changed. There are five main stages of team development that are studied and discussed in your text. The first is a forming stage of development, which is a period of orientation which requires team members to just get to know each other, getting acquainted. Members break the ice, test one another for friendship possibilities and their task orientation. The second stage of storming is when individual personalities emerge. So people become assertive in clarifying their roles and what is expected of them. The third stage of norming, conflict is resolved and team harmony and unity emerge. So there's a consensus that develops on who has the power, who is the leader, what members' roles are. And obviously these can change over time, or there can be a re-norming stage within a team. But the fourth stage is performing. So during the performing stage, your major emphasis is on problem solving, accomplishing the assigned task. Members are committed to the team's mission. So they're really about performing their tasks and getting on with the work. The final stage is the adjourning stage, which occurs in committees, teams that have limited tasks to perform. And it's when a team gets dissolved, so they finish their work together. So the stage of team development in which members prepare for the team's disbandment is called adjourning. So when we consider bringing teams of people together to work for the same purpose, committed towards the same goal and outcome, it's important to consider team cohesiveness. Team cohesiveness is defined as the extent to which members are attracted to the team, motivated to remain in it. Think of a job that you've been part of, and a team that you loved. Members of highly cohesive teams are committed to team activities, attend meetings, are happy with team succeeds. Members of less cohesive teams are less concerned about what the team's welfare is. High cohesiveness is normally considered to be a desirable feature of teams. So, there are certain determinants of team's cohesiveness. Several characteristics of team structure and context influence cohesiveness. First is team interaction. Second is a concept of shared goals. And then third is personal attraction to the team, meaning that members have similar attitudes and values and enjoy being together. So there's a professionalism there and, a sameness in understanding and goal orientation. Two factors of the team's context also influence cohesiveness. The first is presence of competition, and team success and the favorable evaluation of the team by outsiders and cohesiveness itself. So consequences of team's cohesiveness. With respect to the productivity of the team as a whole, research findings suggest that teams in which members share strong feelings of connectedness and generally positive interactions tend to perform better. Friendly, positive team environment contributes to productivity as well as member satisfaction. You know that for yourself. If you've been part of a friendly team, you're more likely to invest more and to support it. Other research indicates that the degree of productivity in cohesive teams may depend on relationships between management and the work team. One study surveyed more than 200 work teams and correlated job performances with their cohesiveness. Highly cohesive teams were more productive when team members felt management support and less productive when they sensed management hostility and negativism. So let's look at team norms for a moment. A team norm is an informal standard of conduct that is shared by team members and guides their behaviour. Norms are valuable because they provide a frame of reference for what is expected and accepted. So on page 615, you can see a diagram there, four ways team norms develop. The categories include critical events in team's history, privacy, first behaviour precedence, carry over from other experiences and explicit statements from leaders or members. Team leaders play an important role in shaping norms that will help the team be effective. For example, research shows that when leaders have high expectations for collaborative problem solving, teams develop strong collaborative norms. Making explicit statements about desired team behaviors is a powerful way that leaders influence norms. It's important for leaders and managers to be really upfront and frank about what they expect of their team. And this obviously builds team culture, which in turn becomes a team norm. So whenever people get together, guess what happens? Conflict emerges and arises. Now, it is the role of a manager and a leader to actually manage these team conflicts as they arise. First, let's look at the types of conflict that may arise. Two basic types of conflict that occur in teams are task conflict and relationship conflict. So task conflict refers to disagreements among people about the goals to be achieved or the content of the task to be performed. Relationship conflict refers to interpersonal incompatibility that creates tension and personal animosity among people. There is a role for leaders and managers to balance conflict and cooperation. There is evidence that mild conflict can actually be beneficial to teams. A healthy level of conflict helps to prevent group thinking, a phenomenon already discussed. So, we need to, as managers and leaders, be committed to a cohesive team that are reluctant to express contrary opinions. When people work in teams, they go along with ideas simply for the sake of harmony. Problems typically emerge because they're not actually saying what they want to say. They're not being honest. And often this leads to tension and conflict. So we need to deal with these as soon as we are aware of them. So there is a process of balancing conflict and cooperation. All managers and team leaders need to encourage cooperation, people to work together, but also this is balanced with needing to deal with conflict as it arises. So what are the causes of a conflict? Several factors can lead to conflict. One of the primary causes of conflict is competition over resources such as money, information, or supplies. When individuals or teams must compete for scarce or declining resources, conflict is almost inevitable. In addition, conflict often occurs simply because people are pursuing differing goals. Goal differences are natural in organizations. For instance, individual salespeople's targets may put them in conflict with one another or with their sales manager. Conflict may arise from communication breakdowns. Trust issues can be a major source of conflict in virtual teams. So, what are some ways that we can handle conflict? Teams as well as individuals develop specific styles for dealing with conflict based on the desire to satisfy their own concern versus the other party's concern. Some of the styles include the dominating style, the avoiding style, the compromising style, the accommodating style, and the collaborating style. Each of the five styles is appropriate in certain cases, and effective team members and leaders vary their style to fit the specific situation. I want you to have a look at the diagram on page 619. Look at the four styles to handle conflict: dominating, collaborating, avoiding, and accommodating. Think about which one you prefer to do. What is your default way of dealing with conflict? Is it avoidance? You just pretend the issue doesn't exist? Or is it being like a bull in a china shop, going in and dominating the situation? You can see there on the chart that there these four categories of dealing with conflict are affected, or in turn affect, these certain categories. Some are more cooperative. Others are more uncooperative in nature. Some are assertive and others are more unassertive in nature. So have a look at that. Think about which one you are. Think about which skill you need to develop as a style of dealing with conflict. Negotiation is a distinctive style of conflict management, whereby people engage in a give and take discussion and consider various alternatives to reach a joint decision that is acceptable to both parties. Negotiation is used when a conflict is formalized, such as between a union and a management. The integrative negotiation process is based on a win-win assumption, in that all parties want to come up with a creative solution that can benefit both sides. The distributive negotiation, on the other hand, assumes that the size of the pie, so to speak, is fixed and each party attempts to get as much of it as they can. One side wants to win, which means the other side must lose. So with this win-lose approach, distributive negotiation is competitive and adversarial rather than collaborative and does not typically lead to a positive long-term relationship. Most experts emphasize the value of integrative negotiation for today's collaborative business environment. The key to effectiveness is to see negotiation not as a zero-sum game, but as a process for reaching a creative solution that benefits everyone. So what are the rules for reaching a win-win solution? Achieving a win-win solution through integrative negotiation is based on four key strategies, which include: number one, separate the people from the problem. Number two, focus on interests, not current demands. Number three, listen and ask questions. Number four, insist that results are based on objective standards. So on page 621, you'll find a summary of the chapter in that gold box, which is titled Remember This. Go through that. Go through some of the videos that I've posted on team management, team building, conflict resolution and negotiation in your lecture notes. Go through the PowerPoint and have a look for your tutorial at some of the discussion questions that I've posted. I've posted one particular discussion question for you guys to contribute to. Please put your comments in there, and I want you guys to interact with each other online, adding to each other's comments. So for example, the question that I'm posing is question 10 on page 624. The question is, if you were the leader of your newly formed team, what might you do to make sure that the team developed norms of high performance? Please give a paragraph of your opinion on the discussion box in the link on Canvas. Talk about what your opinion is. How would you, as a leader or manager, make sure that your team develops norms of high performance? And then I want each of you to contribute a paragraph and discuss it with each other. Say, I agree, I disagree. What about this? Have you considered that? You can make references to Samson in your group discussion, and this is part of your tutorial. Please include it as part of your learning for this week. And please remember that your assessment is due. Have a great week.